This is Thank You Heartbreak.
Hi, everyone. I'm Chelsea Lee Trescott.
As a breakup coach, relationship advice columnist, and the founder of Break Upward, Chelsea is passionate about human beings and their stories. She talks to people about their journeys in love, growth, heartbreak, revelations, and every wound and lesson along the way.
This podcast shines a light on heartbreak, showing you that the most crushing experiences are also your greatest opportunity to become meaningful, relatable human beings. Now, let's get to the heart of it. Hi, everyone. This is Chelsea Lee Trescott, breakup coach and podcast host of Thank You Heartbreak. And this is episode 236 with Jordan Seth Cozy. If you are new to this podcast, the intro is where I talk about what my guest does, as well as what they mean and what they've meant to me. Now, it's not necessary to know what they do or to know what this all means in order to feel the passion within the conversation and to get the perspective. So if you don't have the attention span for an intro, just jump ahead to somewhere around the 14-minute mark. Otherwise, just listen and you can hear a little bit of the backstory and the gratitude. After concluding this call, I was just like stunned. I was like, wow, I am so thankful that happened. This is one of those episodes that I feel like I'm just preparing for and waiting for too. It's when you just click with someone, and yet Jordan is a complete stranger to me. So it's like, how did that happen? How did I click in the midst of what I've been describing as very dark times and in the midst of heartbreak when it's hard to even get the words out? And I want to thank my guest from last episode, Paul Ronto, because I'd gotten off of an hour and 45 minute call with him, and then I had less than an hour before I was talking to Jordan. And when I got off that call with Paul, and I say it in the last episode, I felt like I pivoted. I knew it. I knew that when I got off of that call in that last episode, something shifted. And then I listened to this episode and I was like, oh my God, I hear it. I hear it. And that openness, how my heart opened again, how I was starting to come back into myself again, and thanks to the podcast, I hear how that made a difference with Jordan. And Jordan is just a phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal person. I can't emphasize that enough. And I'll tell you about his background, but then I want to say just deeper about who he is, at least in my mind. So if we're talking about professional bios, he's an executive director for Forge Inc. Platform for Men, the founder of Promethean Men's Groups, the founder of Masculine Forge Psychotherapy Training. He is someone that, working in Canada, he had over 35 clients in a psychotherapy practice a week. I mean, at one point in my life, that was my goal. That was my dream. He took people from crisis to function, and now he mentors people that are going from function to excellence. What's amazing here, though, is with all this bio in mind, and I reached out to him, I was like, let's have you come on, let's talk about the men's groups, because every time I speak with a guy that has started one of these men's groups, I swear to God, these are the men that just, I feel like they see me. They see me and they help me soften. And there's a part of me, like, selfishly wants that, wants to experience, wants to be put in front of a man that can witness me like that. And also, I want the listeners to hear and that know that these groups exist for men. And yet, came on, I discovered in this conversation that he stepped away from this big bio, right? He stepped away. He became so burnt out. He really wanted to listen to his body, something that I am not good at. And he did this after his wife passed away from cancer. Another detail that I did not know until we began speaking. Talk about heartbreak. And so he's gone into this place of wanting to write this book and been writing it for 4 years. And the place he's in now is wanting to be a nobody. Crazy to me that I reached out to him and asked him to come on and be someone in the midst of him wanting to be nobody. And what's so beautiful about this is I've been so scared of that. In the times of my life, and by the way, in the conversation, I misspeak. I said that the one time where I felt like I was a nobody was when I had an eating disorder, and that's not true, actually. I got the opposite attention. In my life, I speak about this, how always having people say, are you someone? Are you a celebrity? You can do this, telling me who I am, who I can be. And getting that sort of attention, yes, it's flattering, but it's also felt like such an expectation and such a denial, really, of who I am right now. In the time in my life where I felt like a nobody, I said in the episode, was when I had an eating disorder, and that's actually not true, because I got the opposite form of attention then. It was ridicule, it was criticism, some people praised me, it was scorn, it was humiliation. The time when I was really a nobody and I felt like a nobody is when I withdrew from the world and I was suffering from depression, from heartbreak. That is when I felt like a nobody. And I've been terrified of that, of falling back into that in my life, of being invisible. And so the beauty here is I'm speaking to someone that, hey, he wants to be a nobody for a while. And I was like, but what about the impact? What about the connection that you've been having with your clients, with these men's groups? What happens to that? What takes its place? And you'll hear his answer. But obviously, it's not that he doesn't have impact. It's not that he's not connecting when he's, quote, in the midst of being a nobody, because he really, and I mean this, he really was someone for me. During this call, I just feel like I have been prepping for moments like this where it just flows. And just by talking to someone, the back and forth, it unlocks something deeper and deeper and more honest within yourself. It's like in talking to someone and relating, you're getting closer and closer and closer to what you know is real for you. I'll tell you what's been real for me as I was getting into this call is that I had been crying so much. And the reason that I reached out to Jordan was by happenstance. I came across an article of his, you know, clicking around or something, read this article about crying and about other people witnessing your tears. And I don't remember the specifics. All I know is that I was like, wait, here's a guy that's writing about crying. And I was just falling for someone that witnessed me crying from such a raw place. And someone, a man, hadn't seen me do that in 4 years. And the last man that did that, I was so in love with. And here I've been only dating a guy for 4 months and he saw me like that. And though he consoled me, I felt discarded by him afterwards. And so when I read Jordan's article, I was like, whoa, who's a guy that like understands the power and the earnestness and not to just shun someone who's feeling, who's in the midst of feeling. Who's acknowledging that? Who's someone? Can I meet someone? Is someone out there that wouldn't just turn their back maybe on that, on me? And though I reached out to him and I was like, let's talk about the men's group that you do, it wasn't about what he does. That's not why I reached out to him. I reached out to him because I was like, I want to know the man who could write something like this, who believes in acknowledging feelings not avoiding them, not ignoring them, not acting like all that pain, all those tears, all that happiness, sadness, joy, whatever it is, acting as if it didn't happen, as if it shouldn't be spoken about. That's why I reached out to him. Not because what he does, but because I had this sense that I could connect with who this man is. And at this time, a woman reached out to me, actually, and she had read an advice column of mine. It had been so long since I'd written it and read it myself that it was weird to read back over the words of a former self of mine. And somewhere within that article was this line, and it's really a motto of mine. It was such a good reminder that I needed. It's crazy how these things happen. And it was, you know, like after a heartbreak, don't look for the next person you can love. Look for the next person you can learn from. Say person, but the line was actually look for the man. Don't look for the next man you can love. Look for the next man you can learn from. I reached out to Jordan because I wanted to learn from him. And what I got from the experience was an understanding of what his wife, who's now passed, taught him, which is how to be loved. When he said it, you're going to hear me. I thought he said how to be love. Oh yeah, be love, give love. No. Something other than that too. How to receive love. How to let yourself be blessed by someone else's feelings and appreciation of you. I don't want to go on too long because this is one of my favorite conversations. There's so many things I want to call attention to within this episode and things that happened after and thanks to it. But more than any of the things I can say, I guess I just really want you to hear this. And I hope that you are impacted by Jordan and just the experience of listening as I was. And if you're ever in a place in your life, this is to women listening, like, and you don't think that there's a guy out there that could listen to the reality of you, that could have compassion, extend compassion, that could relate to you. I hope this last episode with Paul and this episode now with Jordan is an encouragement that no, there are men out there that are just like you. I think that we're all just waiting for someone to like call some attention to it, to call out the elephant in the room, just to speak about what it is to be human, speak about your human experience. And I think that you'll find that so many of us can latch on and really embrace that moment with you. They'll show up for you in that. So thank you always for being here. Thank you for listening. And please to support this podcast, of course, tell other people about it and review it, rate it. It's part of the algorithm. In order for other people to hear about it, it needs to be rated. And it would mean the world to have an honest rating from you. So here we go. Here's an episode that I've needed and I've wanted and really, really just felt so good in the moment. Oh my God. That picture of you was out of this world.
You like that one?
Yeah, quite the introduction. My God. I was like, what am I signing into right now? Like a centerfold.
Many years ago.
And a sword behind you? Who are you?
I think many things over the years.
Are you like a nostalgic person?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, maybe writers are just all nostalgic.
We like to dig into history and find what feels good to us. You know,
or is it to make something that didn't feel good through the writing?
Absolutely. Or to make sense of things that don't make sense.
Or to make something live on forever. We could go on and on.
Yeah. No, I like that.
I just have to get back to it. You know, I feel like I don't understand anything until I'm writing about it. And I'm like, my God, I haven't been writing for years. I must not understand anything I've been going through.
Really? You don't write anything down anymore?
I mean, it's not that I don't write anything down, but I haven't like had an article published where I've really had to think something all the way through. You know, that's like a different level of care that you give something when you're having it published, I think.
There is, yeah. Yeah. There's a deep focus. But I mean, talking to people is similar in a way.
It is, but like, I don't make the connections like I do in writing.
Mm-hmm. The internal connections.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, even with the podcast, it's been such a different experience because with writing, I have so much control over how I'm analyzing it. You know what I'm saying? But like, as this is, it's like real time. It doesn't sound, you know, polished at all. Mm-hmm. And also when you add your voice to it, there's no fooling anyone. When someone reads your work, they hear it in their own voice and can kind of interpret accordingly. Mm-hmm. But with your voice, it's a whole level of vulnerability.
Very much so. Yeah, very much so.
There is an article that you wrote that I have to start with. The one about crying. I've been crying so much this past month. And thinking also about, well, one, I remember seeing my mom, like, when she cried once, I was like, oh my God, that's the face of someone who hasn't let themselves cry for years. And it's so painful when you see someone else expressing their pain for the first time.
Wow. When was that?
God. I think that was right when I left for college, like around that time, 2005. So years ago.
Okay. I've also had an upwelling of tears in the last several months. So, you know, it's probably a good topic, you know, because it, when it stays inside it, I mean, it corrodes, you know, and when it comes out, life changes, you know, we see it differently. The, you know, the ambiance is lighter, our connections are lighter, we speak easier. You know, we seem to have more vision, you know, if we can really get that stuff out. It's a fascinating thing is experiencing pain in the body and letting it out, you know.
It was crazy though, this last month. I don't know, you know, sometimes where you're like, wow, I don't feel like I've like cried from this place in so long. I get moved by things, I'm sensitive, but then there's like another level of tears where you're almost like crying for yourself. Like it's almost like a child's like so helpless feeling.
Yeah. Sometimes I call it the pain of your own existence. And, you know, for each person, it's different and it just erupts, you know, and we could explain it with words and things, but each person seems to have this entryway into the, you know, explosion of tears. And it's a formidable experience. And so you've had, you know, ongoing, like, each day, each week kind of just comes up and you're not sure why and it just goes. Is that kind of what it is?
Not always like I'm not sure why. I mean, maybe like why now is a good question. It was happening everywhere and then it, you know, ramped up. But like, oh my God, I'm editing this episode that's going to come out this week. And I started crying with him. He was talking about his parents and like I had been questioning and analyzing and thinking about my parents. And so that impacted me. I mean, 2 weeks ago, I was showing up to a co-working spot. And when I would speak to someone, they'd be like, Chelsea, you look like you're on the verge of tears. And I couldn't hold it back, which I think ultimately, you know, was why I'm able to sit here right now and laugh. It's like, wow, by really allowing it to happen. And in a way, I was like kind of scared of myself at that time. And I think that by allowing yourself to cry is like being with that fear.
It's totally true. In the body. Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's like what I've seen over the years, you know, I've worked with a lot of people and I've seen, you know, there's like dirty crying where it just doesn't seem to end and there's like no relief. And like people are crying for days and weeks, sometimes months, sometimes even years. There's no relief. It's like, I'm tired of crying. It's like, there's no relief. And then some people, they can just like, they go and they let it through. And then like after they're like, oh, you know, and then there's some profound relief, you know, in the days and weeks following sometimes. And you know, there's like two types of crying, it seems like, and differentiating those and getting into the subtle place of those, how to kind of separate the two and maybe cry more efficiently. It's interesting.
It really is interesting because I'm like, whoa, this was different than it's been in the past.
Yeah.
It's just so confronting. Yeah. So confronting. And It's interesting. Like on the other side of it, it's not like I have every plan in place.
Right.
But I don't know. I think ultimately it was like really good to go through that experience.
I think the difference is one says like yes to it, you know, like there's an internal decision that's like, I'm doing this. I'm really going to feel it and express it. I say yes to the pain, you know, whereas I think in other situations we judge ourselves and be like, oh, not now, you know, oh, this is terrible. I must be bad because I feel something, you know, things like that. So, but that's good. You've been getting some release and, you know, sometimes we go through periods of this, like for weeks, and it's good. And I tell people to just keep going and trust it.
Mm. You also wrote about how witnessing your tears being a very different thing. I had a similar experience with that in Revelation. I want to hear what you have to say. Why is it different when someone is witnessing you?
Mm. It's almost like at some point along that path of release that, you know, we require someone else's presence to complete it, you know, in a way. And sometimes I don't know what we can go deeper. Sometimes, you know, the pain of what we're experiencing was forged in a relationship with another person and almost needs that other type of person there to help release it. Somebody you trust or that you feel good with. So yeah, it oftentimes isn't complete until there's someone just there with you to witness it. And then it's somehow validated. It's like, okay, yeah, you did this. You went in, you came out, good job. So I think it's a necessary part of the process. Not every time we cry, but I mean, along the way, it usually happens.
Now, does it matter how they're witnessing it, how they're helping you cope with the situation? Do they need to be speaking back to you or can it just really be observing you?
Yeah, observing, hand on the shoulder. I mean, whatever it is you need. And I mean, if you're evolved enough to be in the middle of this, you know, an emotional tirade of tears and you can go, I need you to put your hand on my back and just watch me and don't say anything, you know, whatever, if you know what you need, then that's even better. But I would say just being with you there and accepting the fact that you're going through that is enough.
Let me ask you, maybe you have an answer for me. Why is it harder for me to cry around women and be consoled by women than it is the men in my life?
Well, we could start some psychotherapy if you wanted to get into that, but it's probably just like each of us runs a deficiency in masculine or feminine interaction, you know, and it's very common. So sometimes it'll be a person who needs a mom or a dad or they, you know, they feel a strong masculine force like they've never felt it before. You know, say you're a woman and you've never felt that before. And then you see that, you experience it, you sit beside it. And then it's like, oh man, okay, yeah, I needed this. And then bam, it just floods out. And you know, so it's based on personal psychology, I'd say, why we do this. Like my grandpa makes me cry, you know, I don't know why, but it's like,
What do you mean?
He's old. And every time I leave him, it's just like, what if that's the last time? And then it's like, and then I remember all the love he gave me over the years. And it's like, oh, yeah.
How do you cope with that? I'm so fearful of that. I really am.
The death of somebody else?
In particular, you know, my parents, my dad.
Yeah.
And I think it's been really hard. He's coming tomorrow to stay with me.
Okay.
And just seeing like him age, you know, seeing him slow down, seeing those, like the difference even like in the way he looks, like in his eyes, the way that he looks at you, like it pains me so much. Mm. And I can't believe that after like these dark nights, he's showing up and I might have to bear witness to someone that's not going to live forever.
Yeah.
What is it about your grandfather?
Well, I was just thinking, and maybe it's you know, I'm throwing this on to you from my own experience, but I was just like, you love him so much. And it's a really, you know, that's a really beautiful thing, but it's a powerful surge that we have within us when we really, really just love somebody and we want them there and how much they've you know, given to us and offered to us. And for him, he's been like an angel to me and thinking about him not here, thinking about him he's almost 95, thinking about him deteriorating is, you know, it's such a hard thing to grasp. Now I will add that I went through this with my wife. She, she actually passed away in October from cancer. And so seeing somebody deteriorate, something that I'm more familiar with now. But yeah, as we go through these things, the big emotions, so at some points you'll be afraid of him passing. Yeah. And you say yes to it, because I think it's just that you love him. I mean, the love is obviously so deep with him that that can overwhelm as well. But I just practice like opening up and breathing in and going, man, I want to feel all of it, because if we don't, then we, you know, we shortchange ourselves.
Yeah, we miss out. We miss out.
Yeah, the fullness.
Because the alternative, I mean, I could imagine going through this experience with your wife, it could make you more guarded. Like some people come out on the other end of that so guarded, not saying, oh my God, I need to actually open up more and lean into it even more.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's this definition of grief that says grief is just the inability to express love, right? And when you can't express it anymore, then it's like, where does this go? And it's like, I'd be interested to hear what would happen if you, you know, if you just told your dad how much you loved him and went there and probably just erupted in a volcanic, you know, storm of tears. But it's, you know, it's something like that. Yeah.
He's like larger than life, you know, and someone that you can totally feel in a room. And it's so crazy to think about when he passes away, hopefully, you know, if I have kids or if I speak about him, it's weird that I'm going to have, he's like a story that I'm telling, like people won't be able to really know the energy. I think it's all about that energy. It's so crazy when you realize, like, perhaps embarrassing, but I remember experiencing this with my cat, where I realized, like, after my cat had passed away, I did not want to see the body, because I realized, like, that was no longer my cat. And I realized, you know, this essence, it's all intangible. And also, like, just like the sadness of my father not witnessing the elements of my life, maybe me really coming into myself, or it's heavy, you know, like to be 34 and maybe he won't meet the person I'm with. Maybe my kids won't meet him. Maybe he won't walk me. Like, it's not even about those moments, even I'm like reaching for the large ones, but it's just, it's overwhelming. And I thought that kind of exposing myself to all these stories of heartbreak would make me so much stronger. And it has, but it hasn't made me immune. It's made me so much more sensitive.
Yeah. I mean, you say he fills up a room, but I mean, your presence is growing. How many episodes do you have?
200. Yeah. Why?
You're filling a space, you know. It's, we don't necessarily fill rooms anymore because of, you know, everything that's gone on, but you know, you're filling a space. And I mean, could you say that some of that came from him and that his spirit is somehow in you somehow?
I love the idea of that. I have a twin sister, and she says that she's written me some messages before about how I have that element of his, and she fears him dying as well, and that she knows that, like, his spirit and this thing, this larger than life, will exist through me. And I kind of believe in that, that, like, when someone passes, that you might become more charged up by their essence that you so badly wanted to, you know, keep alive, that now you become it more.
It's almost like when they're alive, you're ingesting it. And then when they pass, it's like it emits out from you. That's what I've experienced, at least, you know, with my wife and those that have passed away in my circle, my family and things. So in my experience, that's true.
What element of your wife do you think is living through you now?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I'm glad you asked, because I want to reflect on that. And I think she was very efficient, and oftentimes I just kind of flow with it. And there's times where efficiency is very, very potent. And she enters all the time, every day, she enters my mind. But I think one is how to be loved is one of the big ones. And
love?
How to be loved.
Oh, be love. I thought you said de-love. I was like, de-love. Okay. How to be love.
How to be loved, yeah, in a good way, and to accept that. I mean, that's a hard thing for a lot of people, and it's been hard for me to do that, to be loved, and to go, wow, this person's really loving me. It's like, it's coming in, but it's like I'm not letting that fully in. And how do we do that? What's the path to remove the obstacles of love? And I think I live with that every day now. Because when they're gone, you think about all the things that, you know, how you wish you would have loved more or received love more. And that's what I'm thinking anyways.
I feel you.
Yeah.
I look back and I'm like, I just wish I had loved more. I wish I'd, you know, pointed more things out about them that I was seeing. You know, I just wish I could do more of it. Guarding myself from it.
Yeah, guarding myself outwardly, but also guarding myself from letting it penetrate me.
Right.
So that's one big thing for sure.
Why do you think that, like, you wouldn't receive love? Why is there resistance to that?
I think I did the best I could. I was pretty aware of it. But it's just like to see your inability to do it at times was really tough. I think also too, when someone's dying, they don't have a lot to give. And then that changes the trajectory, because it's like, oh, now I'm not getting the love that I used to get. So it was both. It was just like, you know, how can I open myself to what is there? And then when there's an abundance of it, how can I bathe in it, you know, and then use that to return what I have. So I think about that all the time. I don't have any answers. It's like a lived thing that you got to just go through and keep experimenting and be open.
Did you ever feel like you were cheating on her after she passed away and meeting other women? I remember with an ex of mine, I broke up with him, but I was still in love with him after. And I felt like I was betraying him, betraying this love I had for him by being with other people.
Beautiful. Yeah, beautiful question. Yes, absolutely. I know in my heart that it, you know, it's okay for me to live my life and to go forward, you know, with it in whatever way I choose. But I think the part of me that wish she was still here and healthy is the part of me that struggles with moving on and having new partners and having different sexual experiences and things like that. It's absolutely. I mean, especially the first few times, yeah. You know,
you're they like, know about it. Do they know about?
Oh yeah.
Those women that you were with knew.
Absolutely.
Was it an emotional experience?
Yeah, it was otherworldly. It was just, you know, it's like, you know, oh, that's not her. Oh, and then, you know, you're trying to stay present and enjoy the experience and provide an experience. But it's, yeah, I mean, it was very strange. Yeah. And it's a practice in staying present, really. and to, you know, to really just be with the person that you're with.
I know. It's all about presence. It's all about presence, which I realize then sex is really such a form of self-expression.
Absolutely it is, yes.
During the pandemic, I opened my doors to the men of the world of New York City. And I have to tell you, it was like this path, this awakening of being present finally.
Yes.
Realizing that even in these casual experiences, somehow for myself, I was able to reach a certain level of intimacy. And I think it was just because I was there. I remember even with men that I loved, I used to just be in my head like, is this love? Should I be feeling differently? I was like always in a different place.
Yeah. So many different facets of the universe hitting you, you know, from all these different angles. And, but I, you know, it's just like, as I continued to explore, it's been, you know, it's kind of like, oh, well, you're expecting something bad to happen to you because you feel guilty a little bit about, you know, having moved on or whatever. And, you know, that's the way my mind works sometimes, but it, you know, it's been a beautiful experience, I think. And honoring my life and not holding on in total defeat, I think honors my wife. And I think, you know, she left a video for me to watch after she passed, and she told me she wanted me to move on and to be happy. And she didn't want to think about me being alone and stuff. So, you know, those are really sweet experiences that I had. So, yeah, I mean, I'm going forward heart open and, you know, I'm not new, opening my heart to the women of New York, but I'm opening. It's snowy Canada up here still. So, you know.
I'm sure you can find a few out there looking for some warmth.
Well, I've been seeing one lately pretty exclusively, and it's been good. So.
Wow. Yeah. Congratulations on that. I mean. Not easy these days.
It's not. No.
Consistency, my God. You know, one of my biggest values. So hard to come by. I'm so craving to be someone who stays and to be with someone who stays so I can learn the hard stuff. I'm not kidding. It's like crazy to have 230 episodes and I haven't been in a relationship since starting. It's like, oh my God, like someone, please.
Like, yeah. And you're right. Consistency is huge when two people just like show up for each other and, you know, you're not expecting things maybe, but it's like time after time you realize this person keeps showing up and, you know, that's something to look for, I think. And I'm believing for you.
Thank you. Rooting for me.
I wonder if things will shift after this visit with your dad.
My God, my sister said to me, because he was just with her, and she said, really welcome the healing that he brings. It was like so amazing that she said that. And I think that this is something I have to confront with him. You know, it's like I'm almost like nervous for him to come in and want to talk about work and my life and the choices. And I grew up, and he's changed a lot, you know, as he's gotten older, but I grew up and you never allowed to be depressed, never allowed to like be uncertain, not moving forward, not ambitious. It's been hard because when those are the questions, I remember when I was in grad school and he would call and he would ask about grad school and kind of like applaud me being in grad school, but I was so depressed. I was addicted to Adderall. I was never leaving my apartment. I was the biggest recluse. I can't even say the word. And I didn't want to talk to him on the phone because I knew that my answers to his questions would be disappointing. That's what I felt at the time. And also
you couldn't be authentic with him because you didn't want to let him down, but you're like dying inside.
Also, like, I went through an eating disorder my first year of college. And when I came back for the summer and I was there with him, he was shocked. I mean, of course, anyone would be scared, but we never really have ever spoken about it. Like the things he said to me, the fear, I would shake in my bed at night, being that like of how he was going to treat me the next day. Like, I'm starting to realize that, you know, I thought I faced it by talking about it and by writing about it. But it's like, yeah, what is it done by not addressing these things eye to eye with the person that saw it going down?
Well, I mean, maybe some of that's coming down the pipe here right away.
I know.
Yeah. And all these, you know, experiences of crying and letting, I mean, maybe it was preparing. Because I, like, sometimes I do psychedelic ceremonies and in the days or weeks leading up to it, it's like my body's going through changes. It's like getting ready for it, you know, and to go through that experience. So it's, you know, maybe you're being primed a little bit for this, you know, what's probably going to be a monumental experience in some ways.
I think he's definitely part of it. I have to be very aware of the timing. It's very interesting. And again, I think it goes back to what I've wanted to see of myself in dating too, where it's not appearing to be the entertainer. That's always high on life.
That's exhausting. Yeah. That's a big leak. You know, you're constantly just giving and it's like, you just can't like rest into yourself and, you know, let your feminine radiance shine. And it's constantly like, hey, you know, I'm on high alert. You know, it's gotta be tough.
Yeah. And I think that like relationships used to really help me. They would always soften me during these experiences, you know, they would actually like make me just be lighter and more playful.
Good.
But, you know, at the end of the day though, it's been a long time since I've been in a relationship. So I think about how, these years of giving and receiving other people's stories and overcompensating in ways and being an entertainer during it just to get by or to rise above or something. I'm like, dude, I think that this has taken a toll.
And there's such wisdom in letting go sometimes. I mean, I'm going through a huge period of that in my life, of letting go of things. And sometimes it's scary because that's, you know, how we've identified ourselves as being and is, you know, the entertainer, as you say. But, you know, letting go of the need to do that and letting that come out naturally is probably great because you're already good at it, you know, but letting go of like the constant need for that to be, a constant is, it might invite some things into your life that you don't know. And for example, like you were talking to me about men's groups in the email, and I've been running them for 7 years. And And I was a registered psychologist up here for several years, and working with people in crisis in all sorts of different forms. And when my wife got sick, I just started to be like, man, I don't know if I can do this anymore. And then, you know, time would go on. I was like, I don't think I can do this anymore. And then, in the last several months, I've stepped away from doing therapy. I passed my men's groups along to a younger guy who's really passionate. I'm still taking part in them, and I founded them and created them, and they're great. But just moving away and creating that space and not needing to be everything for everybody has been really good for me.
Whoa, because it's been really hard to be showing up and doing these things while I'm in the midst of some heavy duty heartbreak myself. It's just like a blur. And like receiving other people's anxieties all the time about their heartbreak while I realized like, wow, I never wanted to compartmentalize in my life. But when you don't compartmentalize, you're just like flooded by everything. So wait, so you're stepping away, and I'm sure that those jobs and that vision like really fulfilled you and gave you a sense of connection and impact. What takes its place now?
Deep down, I think as far back as I can remember, I always just wanted to write a book. So I've been working on one for 4 years, and I'm almost done it. And it'll be a dream come true for me. So to just, take everything, strip it all down, and just, to focus on that as my main output of energy has been super rewarding.
But what do you think about like this culture where it's like, oh, have the men's group, see the clients and be writing the book, do it all. What do you think about that? Why not just do it all?
I did it all for a long time. It drained me, I think it probably took away from my ability to really be present, during parts of my wife's sickness. And it also, I didn't have the full capacity to write the book I wanted to write. But I get that. I get that to be full on and to, really give it all you got. I think there's wisdom in that because if anything, you learn what your limits are. But as far as moving on has gone, it's just like reading into how my body feels when I'm doing all those things. And if it's just like, shutting down, and as I'm approaching a group or a client or whatever it was, then it's like, I gotta listen to this. I gotta trust this.
Oh my God. You gotta trust this.
Yeah. And that's really tough.
Sometimes it's like thinking that, for example, with the whole thing about like approaching a client, it's like, well, maybe there's something wrong with me. Maybe I just need to learn how to get more like what's blocking me from this, but like trusting that you're feeling something.
Mm. And there's been over 100 years of psychotherapy, and it doesn't seem like the world is necessarily becoming more sane. And part of me is like, if I step off, it doesn't mean the world's going to jump off of its axis. There'll always be those types of issues. And I do some mentoring. So I have 5 clients that sign up for a year, and they have access to me. But it's more moving from, function to excellence versus crisis to function, like I was right. doing before.
Right.
Yeah. So a little bit of a shift there.
Wow.
But it's scary, but it's also when the body's feeling this so often, like you say, you're going through all these internal changes, and then you have to get yourself up for an interview or whatever it is that you got to do. And you're like, oh man, I'm okay. Let's just get to the grind. And then your body's telling you something. And when you create that space, it's kind of strange because when you surrender sort of to the flow of life rather than making life what you always putting forward so much effort to just create the life that you want to live. And we miss out on the magic of what life can really bring. And when you emailed me, I was like, oh, here's one thing that life's bringing me. And so I'll just do it instead of being like, oh, I got to get on my podcast. I got to do all these damn things and, make myself known and all these kinds of things. And, lately I've just been feeling like it's okay to be nobody for a bit and it's a scary thought for a lot of people. And I'm not trying to scare people by saying that, but for me, it's just like actually sinking into that has been a relief and just trusting that like the interests that I have that I want to engage in.
Maybe freeing yourself of the noise for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yes. After a heavy loss like that, I think it's wise.
Right, because a lot of the other work too, it can just become like avoidance. Like before you look up and all this time has passed and you haven't really addressed what you've been feeling within.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you know this, you know, being in other people's pain has a toll on us.
I never want to admit that. I never want to admit that. That's what's crazy.
Yeah. It's called compassion fatigue. I mean, too much compassion is also poison.
Wow.
Like in today's world, we're expected to care about everything. We're expected to care about, you know, farms in India or Ukraine or, you know, what's going on in, I don't know, what's going on in Ecuador. Like there's so many things to care about. It's ridiculous, you know? And then, so we're caring for these people that we're working with, which is cool. But then we're going around and we're caring about what's going on the whole world. And it's just like, the output of care is enormous. And like the input is at such a detriment.
My very first motto was, above all, one must care.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But the thing is, people don't understand is that they're already good at caring. Like you're never going to lose that, you know, and shutting off all the care from all the things that are going that we actually like realistically can't do much about, and putting that into ourselves, but also in just in our general vicinity of the people that we interact with each day, our family, our friends, these kinds of things. And it can be helpful, but I think it's wise to look at how much we care about all the things that are happening and see if we're perhaps overextending ourselves.
Totally. There's so much to say there. I think sometimes it's like seeking like to identify with issues that are going on. And it's like,
yeah,
I hate to say it, but it can almost be like they hop from issue to issue.
Yeah. Like there's flags of Ukraine around my neighborhood. And I was like, I've never seen a Canadian flag in my neighborhood. And I'm like, this is weird. It's very strange how this happens. And I get it. Like, I understand, like maybe they have roots there or whatever, but you know, identifying as somebody who cares about everything is something that's celebrated, you know, and it's something that's like, oh, that's just what you should be. Cause if you're not that, then it's like, you know, you're not part of the human race, but it's like whoa,
you're the problem. No. This is what they'll say. You're the problem.
You're the problem. You're part of the problem because you're not doing anything. You're not caring. At least you could care. At least I care.
Yeah.
But really some of that is just masked inability to live one's life true to oneself. You know, it's just masked in this caring. And, you know, that's troublesome.
What were you like when you got out of high school? What type of guy were you? What was the reputation? What was the word on the street?
Oh, well, right when I got out of high school?
You know, whenever, around that time.
Well, I was a basketball player. I played university basketball. So I was a bit of a jock, you know, and an academic and a little bit of a nerd too. I liked chess and.
You dabbled in everything.
I think I've dabbled in everything throughout my life. Yeah. And I was playing university basketball, but actually just into university was one of the hardest times of my life as a young man in 20 years old. I didn't know where I wanted to go. I'd been this basketball player my whole life, but I stopped having interest in it for some reason. And I had a bad breakup. And then I was in engineering, which is like the furthest thing from anything that I, you know, would ever want to do in life. And, you know, I was at the top of this 13 story residential building in Edmonton in Canada. And, I'd go to the window every day and think about jumping because it was like, you know, I was in an extreme amount of pain, not knowing, you know, who I was or what was going on. So I don't know what my reputation was at that point. I was kind of, you know, solitary, but in my more outgoing years, probably very, experimental and confident and, you know, wild.
Right. Wait, how did you get so secluded during college? I mean, that's exactly what happened to me. It's like,
yeah,
total change. So I was so confident, so experimental, all this had such a reputation, and then nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. Talk about becoming a nobody.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is my, you know, my next octave up, because it's like, I like it now. It's like, I don't like the pressure to be somebody is, man, it can be hard on people. And it doesn't mean you never do anything, but the pressure to be somebody. And that was maybe the first time where I was like dying from being somebody and realize like, and not knowing that that was maybe good for me, but you know, I thought I was literally going to die just from my feeling so shitty. So yeah, that's who I was when I first got out of high school. But in high school, I was very popular and you know, I had a great time.
I used to say those were my peak years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. Something that I've been like kind of acknowledging with myself recently is my whole life, people have always approached me like, asking if I was someone bizarre. And I feel like really like narcissistic.
Like how so? Like, what would they say to you? Like, are you somebody? Like, how would they do that?
They're like, are you a model? Or like, are you a celebrity? You know, you're such an author. Or, oh my God, you should like, you need to act. I can see you like being the star. It's always so big. You know what I'm saying? And always something more I could be. Someone was seeing, had a vision of me. They saw me as that. And I was like, so far away from that. And started when I was a young kid.
Wow.
With everything I do, everywhere I go. I remember I was working at this cruise ship line, you know, just taking like some gig work. And these women, they're like, you're way too pretty to be doing this. Like, are you a model? And it was just like, am I a model? Am I someone else not doing what I'm doing now? Yeah, and it's like, no wonder I have this endless striving to arrive in life.
It's almost like you could never arrive because wherever you were was not a reflection of where the people around you thought you should be.
Right.
Yeah.
I've always had like these big aspirations in life, you know, like Oprah is my muse.
Great.
It's kind of scary to think if I were to spend my whole life trying to become something and then feeling like I never became it. It's like, what a heartbreaking journey. I mean, I would be a miserable person as I got older. And I remember I had this mentor in undergrad that was reading my writing, and she was like, oh, are you someone, you know, she called me in about my work. She's like, are you someone that gets stopped on the streets? And I was like, yeah, like my whole life. And she's like, I was too. And she's like, you have to overcome it because the moment you don't get it anymore, you'll feel completely lost. And that happened to me. You know, like I experienced that with the eating disorder. So like, it's inspiring what you're doing, like kind of removing, like being the helper, like being someone that's orchestrating healing, like removing yourself from that to quote unquote be nobody. And it's like, I don't even know if we realize how much the pursuit of that could panic us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just really appreciate how authentic you've been with me today. I've gotten no inclination that you feel like you need to be somebody. I mean, you show up, and I haven't actually listened to, I didn't want to listen to any of your other interviews. Maybe you listened to 5 minutes of one. I was like, no, I'm going to go in cold turkey because, you know, we're supposed to meet each other for the first time. And I really like this. You know, it's just like, we just got right into it. And as far as I can tell, you are who you are. And you really bring forward your honesty and your journey. And it's great. So whatever this practice of podcasting has done, it's done something.
It's amazing how it seems, you know, dramatic to say that it saved me. But I knew that in the beginning, like because I had isolated and stopped talking to people and was only kind of talking to the person I was romantically involved with, I was like, that is no solution. Like, I'm always going to be fearful of losing someone. And I'd always, like, you know, wanted to be Oprah, have a talk show, and started the podcast really believing that conversations would pull me through, that it would reintroduce me to myself. Like, I'd get myself back and also change and, you know, like, you know, just all the wisdom. Like, yeah, man, I mean, like, it's been a ride.
It's so interesting because you go so deep with someone and then they're like, they're not there the next day and they're not there the next moment. Right. It's a real practice of like really being with someone and then like, oh, they're not there. And I mean, therapy is very similar in some ways too.
Kind of like the story of my life though. I mean, the interaction, I love New York for that reason, being able to talk to people on the fly and really show up and be present to that moment. But yeah, I mean, in a way it's like, wow, I really have been practicing like not attaching.
Mm. Yeah. What do you think about this is a question that pops up. What do you think about this idea that you need to be totally good yourself before you find somebody? And
How do you know to ask me that question? Did I say that? Are you just intuitive?
No, it came into my mind just now.
You're intuitive. I mean, I think that this has really, 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 really plagued me in relationships. In a point where it's like, if I don't catch, I think that was part of like all the tears and everything. It's like, if I don't catch this now and address it now, I could really miss out on something and had gotten it wrong. I've always thought that like I had to be in a certain place to be with the person I really want to be with. So when I was like really, you know, not making money, I went for men that didn't have any aspirations, you know, and I thought that like it just, they wouldn't bother me or like try, you know, they wouldn't encourage me to go after more. And it allowed me to just kind of sit on my dreams and to gather more shame. And I've carried a lot of shame, I think, into my single life, into my dating life, feeling it's always been like, it's always been though, like I need to be more on, like I need to be more like productive in my life and that I need to be making more money. And the feeling like that those things aren't happening really.
To get what though? I mean, what? To get what?
I think it's like for someone to take a chance on loving me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I feel like I have so much love to offer. I know that. Like I'm confident in the way that I love. But I don't want to be a burden to someone financially. And I don't know. Like, you know, I do hold myself back in my career or in daily life. And maybe someone will look at that and be like, this is a mess. Like, this is never going to change. So.
Has anyone ever told you that before?
Told me that it's never going to change or.
Yeah. Or that you're not financially successful enough to date.
No, but I think that like.
Because like when I talk with my buddies, like that's like never a criteria.
Like it's crazy that I could have this wrong. Like talk about keeping men at a distance. Like I've been told that too by men. Like they're like, what?
I've heard that from women, and it makes sense to me, you know.
I think because I saw my mom, something like I've internalized like with her. I mean, she gave up a career that she really had her identity in and kind of never got over those good old days. She was so checked out with my dad. So checked out, even though he gave us like this world and he's such a good man. And so it was always kind of weird. It was like, my dad has been supporting us financially our whole lives to like encourage our dreams.
I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. That makes sense. I'm just wondering sometimes if like the need to be something blinds us from the things that we need to say no to in other people, you know, like if that makes sense, like I'm not wealthy enough, but yet like I'm dating this guy who has qualities that I would never even stay with, but I'm focused on my own, you know, faults rather than being like, maybe I should say no to this situation, for example.
Right. Or like the last person I dated, I think that he kind of represented the things I didn't think I had in myself yet.
Mm-hmm.
But there was like an extreme amount of focus on creating wealth to such a degree that really he never asked me a question about myself. And it was kind of like, I got to see kind of like, it was like a mirror for all the things that I'm constantly thinking about. I heard someone talking about it all the time. Like if I'm always thinking about money and what's happening with my career, I heard someone just talking about it. I'm like, there is no room for anyone else in this.
Yeah.
You know?
Hmm. I'm wondering if, you know, sometimes it's not wise to go through the dating world with this kind of like ability to say no, you know, and be like, I don't like that. You know, and
it's
I
not
don't like that. Yeah, to do that, to say, I don't like that. And no to that. Instead of like going through relationships and saying, oh, I'm not good enough for this person. And I need to work on myself rather than actually thinking like, is this person good enough for my criteria?
100%. It should never be anything else. And yet I think somehow, sometimes, I mean, even though I say this and like, I think it's absolutely absurd to do it any other way. Somehow with some people, like romance can fucking dumb you down so hardcore that like suddenly I'm just allowing things to happen. It's mind boggling. Those were also the tears. Like, why would I have done that? Like, why would I have just sat by and just not spoken up? Like, why didn't I just say, no, thanks? Mm. But I think it's ultimately like, hey, these are the moments where you really wake up to what you will allow for out of yourself, from yourself and other people. And I think that I've always maybe been like an extremist. It's like, I have to get to an extreme where it's like, okay, it's not going to happen again. Not going to allow that to happen. It's like, I need these massive wake up calls for myself.
These big stings, you know, where it's like, ow. And then finally we go, okay, you know, and there's some of us that just can't be taught through instruction. And I like people like that. I like you, you know, it's like we really go raw into the experience and over again and again and again.
We want to know for ourselves.
Yeah.
We're testing ourselves, like listening to other people. People might have their doubts, but then it's like, I'm taking on their game plan, their rule book in life. I don't want to do that. I need to know for myself. I don't want to be doing everything that everyone else is doing. So,
precisely.
So I coined the word break upward.
Yeah.
I'm curious what it might mean to you.
Break upward.
Mm-hmm. Upward. The direction. UPWARD.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, coming back to the statement I was talking about earlier, you know, do we need to be right with ourselves in order to enter into a good relationship? I personally think it's bullshit, you know, and I think we need to keep getting into relationships and learning and allowing those things to repeat themselves and, you know, to go through many, many years and say, no, I'm not good enough, you know, and it's, you know, the learning takes place with the big stings or the big successes. You know, so I really like that. So I guess breaking upward would mean I'm going in, and if it sucks, I'm gonna work on getting out earlier and saying no earlier. You know, and I'm gonna feel the pain of what happened.
Mm.
So feeling the pain is kind of tantamount to integrating the experience, and then we can move on, and we are wiser, and we get in, and we're like, oh, no, those are red flags I don't want. And it's weird because life seems to like not hand us the same thing again and again. If we're really going through this process, we're really feeling through, and then the next one will be completely different.
Yes.
But if we're just coasting, it's just then we get the same platter each time. It gets boring. And so it's very strange how life reacts to our internal situation. I mean, I'm a life positive person. I say get in there and feel it. And yeah, break upward. I think it involves really feeling the pain of what didn't work. And also saying yes, like, oh, I really like that about that guy. He had, you know, he had lots of hair. He was really hot. You know, I think I want that again.
Yes, that's really empowering.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, you fucking nailed it. You're like the updated version of my definition of breakup word. It was really crazy when I like had this moment with myself. I was like, wait a second. Instead of like thinking about, oh, I shouldn't have been with that type. What are the things that I really wanted that I liked out of this? Mm. What were the things that excited me about him?
Yeah, that satiated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So we say yes to the yeses and yes to the noes as well. And you know, we probably become more efficient over time.
Like your wife, efficient. I was like, where did you say that? Or you're saying that she was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was. Extremely, you know, to the point where she felt like she completed her mission at, you know, at 40. And I think she did. You know, I think she really did. But yeah. Earlier on in my career as a psychotherapist working with women, I had a couple at the same time, two separate clients who were asking me, you know, how do I find this relationship? And I was thinking about it. And I think I even wrote an article about it. And I was like, you know, and I think, you know, for women in particular, it's really important to develop the ability to say no to things that don't work for you. And that's like one of the hardest things. Right. And, but on the other side, I'm also wondering now too, like, do you say yes to the things that did work, even if that relationship needs to move on? And so I say yes to this, and I say, no, that's not what I want. You know, like, so you got a guy who's focused on money and he hasn't asked you a question about your life. You've been dating for several months and you have sex. You talk about money and he's never asked like, hey, how you doing? Like, what's, you know, what's going on with your family? Or like, you know what? It's like, oh, you really like fettuccine Alfredo. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. So, you know, but you don't like the tomatoes on top. Okay. All right. So you're going through these things, right? And then you're like, nah, that's not long-term for me. So I'm not going to hold on to this. I'm going to say no to it. But I'm going to really like that he was successful and hot and good in bed, like whatever.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's say, like you said, it's saying no faster or sooner.
Sooner and more efficiently, and just risking that, just like we risk, you know, the weariness in the body, for example, or, you know, acting on that and just saying, okay, I need to take some time off or whatever. So yeah, it's a risk to do that. But I found for women in general, generally speaking, it's that efficiency of the word no in the dating world that leads to the yeses.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay. That's good to know. I think I'm in a better spot. I might be revving up. It might be going faster now because I've been saying no much faster these days. Like,
get in there. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. And I really think things will shift after this time with your dad. Go in there with that open heart and just let him know. Yeah. Let him know where you're at.
Where I'm at. Wow. Yeah. Well, where can everyone find you, Mr. Nobody?
With a sword.
Right. And a cowboy hat, I think, at one point.
Might have been a fedora. I'm not sure.
I didn't even get the hat right. Do you have a website or should people read stuff? What do you think?
I do have a website. You know, it's www.jordanseth.net. Seth's my middle name, but my full name is Jordan Cozy. And I have a men's group web page as well. I can send that to you if you want.
Yeah, definitely. I'm all about trying to get these guys in these men's group.
We didn't even get into the whole men's thing. I mean, it's maybe a tale for another time, but I had a lot of fun with you tonight. So good.
Anytime you want to come back and talk about it.
I will. After I finish my book, I'll come back.
Yeah, for sure. And let me read it and then we can go deep on that.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking this chance and saying yes to it.
For sure.
So nice.
And thank you for sharing so much about your life with me. So I'm sure we'll continue at some point.
If this episode resonated with you, it would mean the absolute world if you could pass it on and let other people know about it. How you can support this podcast is really just sharing it, telling people about it. If you know someone that's hurting in their heart, tell them about Thank You Heartbreak. And if you want to be a guest on Thank You Heartbreak, reach out to me. You can find me on Instagram at Thank You Heartbreak, or you can email me directly at Chelsea, Chelsea, at BreakUpWord, BreakUpWord.com. And if you're interested in one-on-one coaching sessions, you can visit my website, breakupward.com/shop, where you can check out directly from my site. It's a super, 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 super simple process. Of course, I will answer any of your questions before you book. And again, you can email me at chelsea@breakupward.com. There's many different coaching options. And I would love to show up for you as you begin to show up in more wise and clarifying and secure ways for yourself. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be right back.